It's me. Ooh-wee. It's me. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit. So y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way along. Ow. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit. So y'all gotta, like,
you know, encourage me the whole way along. Ow. Y'all, what's poppin', man? It's, you know, it's the usual Thursday night Nestorius Public Radio Show live here on We Play Radio. Although by the time you hear it, it'll be whatever night or day. But I always say that because we do record Thursday nights usually. And if you happen to be, you know, listening live, you can call. I always forget to say that. 1-800-893-9562, I believe is the number. 1-800-893-9562. Yes, you can call and engage, you know, with your boy and my guests. So your boy Nestor, Nestorius, Nestor Rodriguez, host, you know, with the most, you know, with the breakfast toast, you know, with the hot butter melting, you know. Anyway, So tonight we have my boy Craig Zucker. What's up, Craig?
Hi, Nestor. How are you?
I'm good. What's going on?
Not too much. Thank you for inviting me down.
Yeah. I've been wanting to get Craig on the show because Craig is a friend of mine, but he's also a character, and I kind of love characters. My whole thing is, like, I don't have normal friends.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I know.
And
exactly.
You know that, right? The moment you met me, you knew this dude.
Yeah.
He's not operating on the same, you know.
And I think that's why we became so friendly, because neither of us were operating on the
same
level.
Yeah, I'm not really interested in normal and what do you call it? Like, I like things that are fucked up and out of order.
Not a total psychopath.
Not total psychopath, but, you know, things that, situations and people that could be medicated, and then, you know, you can alter it. So, yeah, stuff like that.
One arm in the straitjacket.
One arm in the straitjacket, so you can, you know, when you get tired, you can loosen it. But, yeah, we met at Upright Citizens Brigade I was at a place in my life where I was in Los Angeles, and I was kind of like out of the loop from doing stand-up comedy, and I just wanted to do something comedy related. I wanted to do, I don't know, some sort of improv. Well, obviously some sort of improv, but I wanted to do something, and I didn't want to take an acting class, if that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, so Upright Citizens Brigade was one of those things, and, you know, that was a fun thing, you know? There's like what, five levels of that shit?
Yeah, I think they keep adding stuff on over and over. Yeah,
but I think overall it's like five. Like, right. You do level one is intro and it's fun and games.
Right.
Did you do level two?
Yes. It was one of the worst experiences I ever had in my life.
And did you do level three?
No,
also?
No.
So why was level two one of the worst experiences you ever had in your life?
All right. Without being too negative and too, I think, okay, first of all.
Whatever. It's your experience.
Yeah, no, okay. From my experience, the first thing that I noticed, and I'm not bashing on anybody, what I've noticed was the teacher was reading from the book.
Mm-hmm.
He was teach and he read from the book. I'm like, oh, how long are you doing this? Oh, I've been doing it for 10 years. And I'm like, why the hell does he need a book?
Who was this guy? Was this guy the white guy?
It was the white guy.
Like the nerdy white guy?
His name was Johnny something.
Okay, yeah. You know what happened? In level two.
He hated me right away.
Yeah, but he wasn't the teacher that was supposed to be teaching that class.
Yes,
I think
it was.
It was? Okay.
Yeah.
Because I know sometimes, I think the class that we took, the level one was with Eugene Cordero.
Yeah. And now Eugene was a funny guy. And it was so funny that Eugene was represented by one of my coworkers.
Right, because you worked at an agency.
I worked at UTA.
UTA, United Theater Artists.
United Talent Agency.
Talent Agency.
For some reason,
I always thought of United Theater Artists.
No, United Talent
Agency. Was that always the name? UTA was always United Talent Agency?
Before that, it was Bauer, Benedict, and Leading Artists.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Your boy knows nothing about agency acronyms. Okay. All right. Got it.
So anyway, but Eugene was talented. The other guy wasn't. And
Eugene
is talented.
Well, there's everything in life. There's textbook,
right?
performers or whatever, you know, people who go by the book, you know, the famous quote, by the book.
Right.
And there are people who, you know, you master the basics and then you go with the flow and that's who you become. And, you know, and Eugene was a player. He was
naturally funny and he was an all around good guy. But this prick in level two.
Well, Johnny was he seemed like very dry and very strict.
And not talented. How about that one?
I mean, you know, the thing about talent in LA is so subjective that, like, I don't even use that term anymore because talent does not apply just to craft of acting or being funny or being a performer or an entertainer, right? Because if you're successful in this business on any level, then you're talented,
right?
Business-wise.
I can add the word douchebag, too, if I want.
No. Listen, your experience is valid. Your experience is valid. You know, you were a quirky, I mean, when it came to improv, let me see if I get this straight. So
were you taking notes on me?
No. Because everybody would get up and do something. And I'm trying to, it's been such a long time since I've done improv, but there's an intention that's thrown on the table and then you go ahead and you act as if that's your wife and, you know, there's a situation and stuff like that. And everyone, you know, there's no script.
Right.
So no one knows, you know, how to play. But, you know, you have certain parameters, especially level one. It's more loose. You know, when you get to level two,
you're in the Third Reich. And
no, when you get to level two, then there are certain rules that are implemented. And level three, there's more rules. And, you know, the idea is to refine the craft of improv. But what I remember, you were just fucking funny because you're so goddamn quirky. And the shit you would do was almost like non-related to any fucking thing like that was going on within the circumstance of the improv. Exercise.
Right.
So it was always like, what the fuck is this guy doing? You know what I mean? So it was like, for example, you know, it's Valentine's Day. You know, your wife is at home and you come in and your wife, by the way, doesn't have to be a woman. It could be a guy playing the wife. You know what I mean? Which makes it what's funny.
Because
the individual, there's no sex, right? So I could be the wife. It doesn't fucking matter. So you know, most people would go in and would say something related to whatever the hell the relationship or Valentine's Day that, you know, the Valentine's Day was never introduced into it, but it could be like, oh, it's Valentine's Day. How you doing? And then you got to react on the fact like, oh, you know, and it goes on and on and on and on. And you would always come up with some shit that had nothing to do with the core circumstance of the exercise, which always made it. I would always look back and most people would be looking at you going or looking at me going, what the fuck is he doing? You know, like, what is he doing? I'm like, yo, that's Craig. Craig is doing fucking Craig. You know?
What, it's like, it's Valentine's Day, honey. I promise I won't rape you tonight. That's for Valentine's
Day. Some shit
Day,
like that.
You won't be raped.
No, it wasn't even something like that. It's like, what time is the funeral? You would just say something like completely out of fucking left set. Like, what? What are you talking about? Like, that's not even in this fucking dimension.
I remember that kind of shit.
Just shit like that. I mean, really, really good Upright Citizens Brigade teams, which, you know, you go through level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then eventually you start a team and then you can go and play on some of the nights. And some of the best teams are fucking hilarious. You know, like, for instance, they have one team that plays, they take your iPod, right?
Yeah,
they take
that.
Anybody's iPod.
Right.
And I forgot what it's called, iPod something.
Yeah, something like that.
Right? So they'll take your iPod and they'll take any song, right? Play the song, you hear it as an audience, the song is playing, and it could be, oh, Mickey, you're so fine, you blow my mind, oh, Mickey.
Tony Basil, 1982.
Right? You're Mickey. And from that, like, the guy can say, fuck, man. How you doing, Tony? Or whatever, you know, whatever. It could just be something from that. And then the other guy comes in and then, you know, three other women come in and it just becomes this whole like, arena that started with something insignificant that had nothing to do with, you know, the overall picture of it. So, and they could be really, it can be really fun, funny, hilarious, and very entertaining if you have the right team.
But the one thing I always disagreed, the one thing I couldn't stand, they were like, all right, don't try to be funny.
Right.
You know, it's like,
right.
I'm like, okay, I know. No, I said, no, I came to do fucking Shakespeare.
Right.
You know, I want to do Macbeth. Right. I mean, what the fuck, you know?
Well, because the idea is, the idea with that is like in acting also, right? Which is you're the least important person in a scene, right? You as a player are supposed to give all of your attention and focus on the other player. They're the most important. They're the most interesting part of the scene. Right? Because when you actively respond to what somebody else is saying, the scene will eventually evolve and it'll become something other than what you think. When you start implementing your own ideas intentionally or being funny, you're taking away from the course of where that scene could have gone or where it should be. In other words, you're now not making it about what the scene or where the scene is going, but you're making it about something else.
What you're saying is that we're living in Hollywood and no one is selfish in Hollywood. Oh, I get it now.
No. I mean that's the principle of that.
Right.
And it's also the principle of you know, most acting techniques,
right?
So like in Meisner, one of the principles of Meisner is really listening and really responding. So you memorize lines, right? Like right now you're really listening to me, right? Okay. And you're responding,
yes.
Right? Okay. So if there's a script and the word is right, okay, an actor would try to like, you know, make something other than what it is. It could just be as simple as right. Okay, you know, and
right on,
yeah. So the basic principle of Meisner, for instance, to really listen and really respond to your partner, right? And when that happens, it's an organic relationship. So basically, in acting, just like in improv, you're what's interesting is Meisner's definition of acting is living truthfully under imaginary circumstances. Living truthfully under imaginary circumstances. So if you treat any circumstance, right, as reality or truth, then it's not really imaginary. You're not making believe. You're really going through whatever's going on. You're playing the scene, right? And so when you're doing improv, it's kind of the same thing. Right, because you're not making fun of the fact that now you're in Candyland and you're blowing bubbles. You're actually in the scene. You're treating it as a reality.
All right, but you also have a fucking audience there that are expecting to laugh.
right. No, I get it. But again, the principle is that, you know, when you do that, you're actually taking it upon yourself to be the core of the laughter. And that may or may not work. And also, by the way, I'll say it's very difficult.
Right.
It's very difficult to you know, be in a scene and be like, don't be funny.
Right.
Because if you are, you know, you have a wacky sense of humor, it's almost impossible not to.
Unless you want to be the straight man. You could be, you know, Zeppo or, you know, whatever. You know?
Yeah, but I mean, it's, you know, and that's what's very complicated about learning improv in those levels. In the first level, it's not a big deal because, like I said, it's fun, you're goofing
exactly.
And blah, blah, blah. And then the second level, when they start introducing certain rules or parameters, then it's awkward.
Yeah.
You know, and by the time you get to level three, I got to level three and I had to drop out like after two, three classes for some personal stuff. But I was actually considering going back to level two and just taking it over because it just felt like too confusing and too awkward. And I really didn't get it. You know, and they'll say, well, level two is probably one of the most difficult ones, whatever.
And like, oh, you can repeat it. Pay us some more if you can repeat it, but pay again.
Well, I mean, for me, it's basically, I want to know what I'm going there to learn.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's fun. It's fun. It was fun. You know what I mean? And I think level one, I took the intensive, which was two times a week for like 6 weeks, right, and then we had a performance, as opposed to one time a week over a period of, right, you know, 6 weeks or something like that. I prefer to learn that way, because otherwise you go one Saturday, then you got to wait for the next week, another Saturday, as opposed to going Monday and Thursday for
you.
Like 3 weeks, as opposed to 6 weeks, you know, and then you do a performance. So I kind of elected to do it that way. But so you worked at UTA.
I worked at UTA.
Because you've had a slew of different jobs, right?
Yes, I guess the slew is, well, I mean, that was not a slew. It's always been in the same vein of stuff. It's just been other companies.
Same arena.
Yeah. You know, it's all, you know, branding, representation. It's always been the same. So it's like, at least I got to know everybody in town, so.
But you were an assistant to an agent?
Yeah, I was assistant to an agent.
And for how long did you do that?
For a while, and then I floated around. What happened was I started in the commercial division, and then that lasted only a few months. And then I said, all right, I'll go to the mail room and go help out there. But then I went to, my goal at the agency was to sit on every desk from the small guy to the chairman, which I'd mostly covered. Mm-hmm. Mostly covered every desk, so I got my knowledge of, you know, what each person did, you know.
Mm-hmm. You learned the business by doing pretty much every position,
exactly,
so to speak.
Exactly, yeah. You know, because like I said, whether it's going to be a TV lit desk, a movie,
TV literature.
Literary, so for showrunners on TV.
Literary, uh-huh.
You know, or below the line, which I did for
you. So agents are probably the most full of shit people in Hollywood, right?
That's why I wasn't ready yet. Because I, unfortunately, for
you still have some integrity.
Oh, yeah, it's true. And I wasn't good at lying.
Right.
I wasn't a good liar.
Right.
You know,
because you got to constantly be blowing smoke up different people's asses.
Absolutely.
And you got to remember which smoke you blew up this guy's ass, so then you don't blow that same smoke up this guy's ass.
That's not a problem because like I said, that's where the improv actually comes in. Because
that's why you took Upright Citizens Brigade.
Absolutely. Because after I remember doing one thing, I was like, oh, fuck it. I'm not going to go to the next class. I got a job interview because in that form, I could be Craig Zucker, but I could be a different kind of Craig Zucker.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, when I get into the office, mm-hmm, and I'm wearing my suit and my tie, I'm acting. I'm not myself.
Sure. So. I mean, actors, I don't think actors understand the role of an agent.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's almost like, you know, when you're an actor and you get an agent, you're assuming that you can sit home and work, and auditions are going to be thrown your way.
The agent fairy will come.
Right. And that may or may not happen, but that's really not like there's so many. For instance, I was at an agency, a commercial agency, and there were three agents. Do you know how many clients that agency, those three people had?
Like Harry Abrams. Well, you'd say like something Harry Abrams, they have 500 commercials.
500 clients.
Yeah.
Three people.
Right.
Okay, you know how many commercials, how many commercial auditions happen in a day? Maybe what? 10?
Right.
So 10, you have 500 clients.
Right. And they say the odds for your, this was the first thing I was told at the commercial desk, your odds for booking your commercial are 1 out of 50. You'll go on 50 auditions, you'll book one.
If you're lucky.
If you're lucky, yeah.
Yeah, if you're lucky.
And this was years ago.
Right.
Now when I've had 100 now.
Yeah, probably 100, yeah. If you're lucky, and mind you, that's if you're consistently auditioning.
Right.
So like 50 auditions, if you go to two or three a week, chances are the 50th, you know, give or take, you know, you might be booking.
Right.
But there's a lot of elements involved. You know, there's just a lot of elements. And, you know, being in New York, being Puerto Rican, Latino is one thing. Being in California, being Puerto Rican and Latino is a completely different thing. And a lot of people don't understand that being a Puerto Rican from New York is not the same thing, not the same culture, not the same dialect, not the same mannerisms as, I hate to say it, and obviously, because it's obvious, a Mexican.
Right.
Two different fucking planets.
Absolutely.
Right? So then you have, you know, these...
That's why we don't have Puerto Rican restaurants out here.
Right. But you know, you have Cuban restaurants and they fucking suck. 90% of the Cuban restaurants in L.A. are like horrible.
Fried chicken and
But they're horrible. I mean, it's unbelievable as far as I'm concerned. But you know, South Americans, Central Americans, a lot of them, you know, that's the other sector of Latinos. And a lot of them are more neutral. You know what I mean? There's very little neutrality of a Puerto Rican from New York.
Don't forget, I may be from New York, but I'm also from Whitesville, USA. We had one Puerto Rican in our neighborhood, and he didn't even speak Spanish.
Well, that's par for the course. Which you are from the East Coast. You are from New York. Whereabouts?
Rybrook, New York. It was called
Rybrook. Is that Long Island?
No. It's the suburbs of Westchester County.
Westchester. Okay.
It used to be called Portchester.
Portchester.
And then they changed it because they said, okay, let the black guys and the Puerto Rican guys have Portchester.
Got it.
We'll rename our town Rybrook.
Got it. Portchester.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I get it.
Rybrook.
I get it.
And then I moved to even a whiter community, which was Greenwich, Connecticut.
Greenwich.
Yes.
Yeah. I think they might have one black guy.
They have one black woman. It was Diana Ross.
Oh, yeah? And she's famous. But I'm talking about a regular black person. Because some towns, like I remember Fort Lauderdale in the early 80s. I used to go down there. I used to go down to Florida, whatever.
And so did I.
No black people. But I noticed one black person on the beach. And I told my friend, who happens to be black, I said, I guarantee you that Fort Lauderdale pays this black guy to walk back and forth on the beach so that people don't say that Fort Lauderdale is racist.
Right.
And in Greenwich, I know they have one black person.
I haven't met him when I was there.
No, but they had him. He was working somewhere, maybe McDonald's or something.
We didn't have McDonald's in Greenwich.
No, you didn't?
No. Couldn't.
No McDonald's?
No McDonald's. No, I don't remember there being a McDonald's.
So let's go back to the agency for a second. So you mentioned New York. I wanted to address that because I wanted to ask you where you were from. But the other thing is that, like, so you think you're going to sit at home and the agent fairy is going to call you. And so, you know, in L.A., you know, I had good relationships with agents. I'd go into the office and just show my face every couple of weeks. Hey, how you doing?
You must have loved that.
Oh, no, they loved it.
Okay.
No, they loved it. Because I was told, don't fucking sit at home. Go in there once in a while. Say hello, whatever. Just say hi.
Better buy a gift.
Talk the shit. Yeah, no, whatever, you know. I'm charismatic. They would, you know, and I had a good relationship with the agent here and the agent in New York. I was with Cunningham. It was CESD, yeah, Cunningham, Escott, Slevin, and DePini. Cunningham, Escott, DePini,
right.
And then it was CESD, Slevin, DePini, whatever. Anyway, they broke up, and
they're still around. There's some things.
No, they're still around.
Yeah, but there's some letters that changed it.
It's now I think it's called Cunningham, Slevin, or Cunningham, Escott, Slevin. I don't know what it is. And then I was with AKA here. Mm-hmm. And AKA is a small boutique agency, but even something like that has about 500 clients.
Right.
You know what I mean? But then some people, you'd see them in an audition, and you'd be like, wow, how you doing, man? Same guys. Like, you've been going out on a lot of auditions, and of course they'll say, oh yeah, like
absolutely.
Five a week. And then I realize that's just the bullshit that actors say to other actors to fucking make their dick shrivel up.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So needless to say, that's how I got an agent at AKA. I asked this one guy, really? Because I've been in one audition a month. These motherfuckers hardly ever call me. And when they do, they used to call me the night before I was flying out. So whenever I'm booking myself out for like a week or two, and you know I travel a lot,
right,
I'd get an audition. It's like, I have an audition for you tomorrow. And I'm like, I booked myself out from, I'm actually going on the airport tomorrow, so I can't go.
Well, don't ever say we don't call.
Yeah. And then I had an agent, like, then it got bad. Then, as you know, most people don't know the geographical dynamic between living in the valley, like Studio City, like Laurel Canyon, and having to go to
Santa Monica
on a Friday.
We need you there in a half an hour.
At 3 o'clock. So I'd get these auditions, man, like at 11 o'clock, same day auditions. 90% of my auditions were the same day, right? We have an audition for you in Santa Monica. When? Today at 3. It's fucking 11 o'clock. Like, hold on a second. Do you think that I'm just sitting at home with my thumb up my ass? Like, most people have their day planned, right? Apparently.
Even in L.A.?
Well, apparently actors don't, right? Apparently producers think that actors are home, you know, blowing bubbles and shit. You know, well, maybe 20-something-year-old actors are blowing bubbles, but when you're a little older and, you know, you have a house and you got responsibilities, chances are you got some shit going on. right? So I would go, as you know, I would make every effort to go. And one time I couldn't make it. And this fucking, one of the agents at the agency said, why not? And I've never had an agent say to me, why not? And I wanted to tell him because I fucking told you I can't make it. What the fuck? I got to tell you, why not?
Don't you want to work?
My thing is this. If I tell you I can't make it, I can't make it. Don't fucking ask me like I'm in fucking fifth grade, why not? Do you know what I'm saying?
I understand.
And so
that.
Basically, I basically got into it with him over email, right?
Because
really? I got into it. I said, I'm a little taken aback. I've never had an agent ask me why not. I told him straight up. And basically, he came back and he said something to the effect of, well, you know, producers want to know, blah, 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 blah. And then I told him, I said, you want to know why not? Because you're telling me to go to an audition in Santa Monica at 3 o'clock at Friday at 11 o'clock in the morning, and I got things to do. I wasn't at home thinking that I had nothing going on, number one. Number two, going to Santa Monica at 3 o'clock, that means your whole fucking Friday is fucked. Because you go down there, let's say 1 o'clock to get down there by 2 something, and then you do your audition at 3, and by 3:30, if you're lucky, they let you out. By the time you're not going to get back to the Valley till 6, so you're better off staying in Santa Monica.
Right, and that's why you should have got yourself like a little place in Santa Monica just for auditions.
Right, for same day auditions.
Yeah, exactly. Like a little, right. You know, a little fuck that.
So I told him that's why not. And I said, and furthermore.
And what was the retort?
I said, furthermore, I have never refused a same day audition. If you look at my track record and go back to any audition you've, you know, AKA have sent me on, you would see that 99.9% of the auditions, which by the way, about 80% of them were same day auditions, I have gone to.
Okay.
So, consult with Pam, who was my agent, and do the math, and then you'll see that we shouldn't even be having this discussion.
Right, okay. I'll tell you this right now. I wouldn't have got into him, but it's nice to find out that he had a little passion that he wanted you to get it.
He was being a dick.
Just
the way he responded, he was just being a dick.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? It was like, why not? Like I was being reprimanded. It's like, go fuck yourself.
Right.
Why not? Because at 3 o'clock I have a jerk off session and I got to pull my meat with a couple of dudes while we smoke a cigar. That's why not. You care to find out?
I don't think I think you're lying because you can't smoke in Santa Monica.
No, you can. There's a couple of cigar lounges.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You ever been to the Tinderbox in Santa Monica? That's great.
There's
no cigars.
But I don't smoke cigars in lounges. That's one of the.
Yeah, what is this thing with you not smoking in lounges? You want to smoke outside like an animal?
Okay, first of all, do I have time for a big up? Let me see. I'm going to have to give a big up in a little while. This is what I normally do. Hopefully this is not going to be too loud. Hold on a second. Okay. That's a bit loud, I know. Jeremy, I know that's loud. Sorry. Yeah, it's a big up. That's my air horn. That's my trademark.
Okay.
So I just need to know that I could use it whenever I feel like it.
Okay.
So that's, you know, we segued into smoking cigars. So I
not consciously. So, you know.
No, I have a passion for cigars. Okay. I love cigars.
Well, you know, that was my first job, of course, so.
You worked for George Hamilton.
Yeah.
Right? You worked for George Hamilton?
Right.
Hold on a second. Do I have George Hamilton on here on call? Hold on a second.
I worked at George. I don't know if Hamilton, George
Hamilton. George Hamilton had his own cigar line.
That's
Hamilton's, right?
Yep. It was the best place in the 90s. That was my first.
And
first
where
job.
Was that?
That was on Roxbury and Santa Monica Boulevard.
Roxbury and Santa Monica.
Yeah, I'd love to see George again.
George is amazing.
Oh yeah,
he's a great guy.
He was such a gentleman.
Yeah.
Even when I first met him and my friend had me do Zorro the Gay Blade for him. So.
He's a classy,
very
fucking classy, smart,
yep.
Witty,
yeah.
Amazing.
But always a gentleman.
Yep. Amazing guy.
And
here we go.
Place.
Here we go.
Hi, this is George Hamilton, and you're listening to Nestorius Public Radio, where the elite meet at the dumpster.
That's my man George. George Hamilton does an amazing job on our film Silver Skies, which by the way, today I had the pleasure and the honor of being at a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame ceremony for the equally classy and talented and gorgeous Barbara Bain, who played Cinnamon Carter on Mission Impossible, the original Mission Impossible. For those of you out there who don't know the original Mission Impossible, you should look it up. It's an amazing show, actually very cutting edge at the time, 1966, I believe. The first show to actually have an African-American guy, in this case, it was a man, do something that was actually a role that was smart, in a position of, you know, power in a sense. This guy was a spy working for like the Secret Service of the United States, and a show that had a woman not be just a blonde bimbo cooking or preparing food for Mr. Dickhead coming home, you know, after work. She was equally smart and a spy. So Mission Impossible was awesome. She just got her star. I mean, I don't know why she just got it. She should have gotten it like eons ago.
I don't know how they exactly do it. It used to be
somebody has to nominate you.
Okay. Yeah. But it's got to be more than one person.
A few people have to go to the Hollywood Chamber of Commerce.
Right. Who puts up, this is like $5,000. Who puts up the $5,000?
It's actually $30,000.
Okay.
$30,000. So in this case, usually, for instance, there's a star for the Rugrats.
Right.
Okay. So Nickelodeon probably nominates and they say, hey, we'd want the Rugrats to be, which is fucking preposterous that the Rugrats.
One, they're animated.
Right. So right. That a fucking cartoon has a star and someone like Barbara Bain, okay, and she was also in Space 1999. She did amazing TV and some film, but she's the only woman to win 3 Emmys consecutively in 3 years, okay? 65. Maybe 64, 65, and 66 or something like that. 66, 67, 68. And then no other woman got 3 consecutive Emmys until like the 70s or something. Or the 80s, 20 years later.
So what you're saying is Tommy Pickles has an Emmy before Barbara.
A star.
A star. Excuse me, a star.
Yep.
It was funny. I went to one ceremony. It was for Muhammad Ali.
Really?
Yeah. And so he got a star, and the first thing he said was, you know, he goes, I'm paraphrasing, he goes, I don't want that shit on the wall. I don't want people walking on me. So they took his star, and they put it on the wall, and you could see.
Really?
It's the only one that's actually on the wall.
Where?
As you're going up to the Dolby Theater.
Oh, really?
They had it up there, because he said, I don't want people walking on me.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, no, it's the only one that they
so
have.
So it's $30,000, okay. And apparently, I was talking to some of the fans, in this case, some of her fans had been working on this for about 12 years to try to get this going, to raise the money. And of course, they got Barbara involved, and Barbara sold some of her, you know, maybe some of her outfits. She did, you know, they auctioned off luncheon with Barbara.
Right.
You know, $30,000 is a lot of fucking money.
I didn't know it was that much.
Dude,
now.
That's a lot of money, okay? So basically, one of the fans, and these people are amazing. God bless them all. It's like, they were like 5 core fans, and then they got a bunch of people that flew in from Australia,
really?
London. Oh, man. And it was amazing. I've met a couple of the fans. They actually came to the screening at the Los Angeles Film Festival, the LA Femme Film Festival that you saw the movie at.
Right.
And so they get this thing going, and they get her involved, and you know she joins forces, and she does whatever she can to raise the money. You know, putting up some of her own personal items signed and blah blah blah, whatever. And they come up with the $30,000.
What is that number? What is that number for? Where did they get that number from?
Well, I don't know where they get the number from, but they have to.
What's the cost?
Well, the costs go for security and securing the ceremony.
Okay.
So the city of LA has to pay police officers, which is a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah.
Because that's a fucking star.
Right.
That's part of
a Hollywood tradition, you know.
But not only that's a celebrity. That I mean, she's not just a fucking kumquat that just came out of nowhere. That hasn't contributed a fucking thing to the American, you know, cultural consciousness. I mean, this is a fucking, you know, an American cultural icon. She's known all over the fucking world. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? You should fucking just pay for it, right? Instead of paying to repave the fucking road that doesn't need to be repaved. Anyway, so part of the money goes to that.
Okay.
Part of the money goes to constructing the actual star.
Okay.
And, you know, you have to break a square of the street and put it in there and pour it and all that bullshit.
I just wanted to write my own name in one of the empty ones.
Well, and then the other part goes to maintaining the star.
I've seen that. I've seen that where people are cleaning and stuff.
Cleaning them.
Yeah.
Okay. So apparently back in the day, there was no money collected for the maintenance of the star.
Right.
So sometimes you see some of those stars and they're decrepit.
Right.
Some stars, the newer ones. Cracks and all that stuff. Yeah. The newer ones have that implemented into the cost.
Okay.
Into the cost of it. So it was just awesome. And you know what? She was so fucking sweet, dude.
That's awesome.
I was sitting there. There was like a VIP section. I didn't give a fuck about the VIP section, which meant you sit.
What, you get a better view?
No, you get to sit down underneath, you know, a canopy. I don't really give a shit. I actually wanted to stand or sit where I can get a view of her making her speech, because the way they set up the platform and the podium is so that she's actually talking to the press and the camera people, because
it's
being streamed live.
Sure.
So everyone else is standing to the side. So
go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
No, let me ask you something. So they used to have, I don't remember what his name was, the Johnny Grant. That's
yes,
who it was.
And he passed away.
Yeah, of course. So who is the new Johnny Grant now?
I forgot the guy's name.
So who introduced her into?
I forget his name. I have his picture.
Okay.
The really cool thing was that Ed Asner was there. He did an introduction, and so did Dick Van Dyke.
Right.
And these guys are in their late 80s and 90. Dick Van Dyke is 90, you know? And Ed Asner, I think, was in 88 or some shit like that. And these guys are like fucking, like I was telling you on the ride up here, Ed Asner doesn't look great, but put a fucking mic in front of him, boy. Lights went on and he was like cracking jokes left and right. Dick Van Dyke for 90. It was unbelievable.
He was tap dancing all over the
dude, I was like, this fucking guy. First of all, I thought Dick Van Dyke died. No, I'm serious. I thought Dick Van Dyke had passed for some, and of course it was Dick Clark that passed. You know, sometimes you forget and you think of people and you go, nah, he's not alive. So Dick Van Dyke, and I knew
Dick
he was
Dick Van Dyke and Dick Clark. You got those two mixed up?
No. Not face wise. Oh, okay. Just Dick and Dick in my mind.
Dick and Dick in my mind.
In my mind, okay. Yeah. Dick and Dick in my mind.
Those are the one sense I never thought would come out of your
mouth. That's right. Dick and Dick in my mind. So I'm just saying, and plus the fact that he's old, and I thought he's got to be dead. And I wasn't having this thought today because I knew he was on the bill. I mean, I knew he was going to be a presenter. They're friends. Dick Van Dyke. She was on the Dick Van Dyke show, and and she was on, what was Ed Asner's famous show?
Lou Grant. Yeah.
And so she was on that show. She was on every fucking show, man. She just happened to be on one of the most iconic TV shows of from the 60s.
Right.
That, like, I mean, come on. Mission Impossible, when you look at the films that came out, they're okay. You know, they're more action-driven. And these guys were doing... talking. They had their social commentary. I mean, it was
a totally different time for that.
And it was brilliantly written. The TV shows were written. The acting was great. Martin Landau was her husband at the time.
Right.
What's interesting is that you can watch the third Emmy that she won, because I'll say the short version when Mission Impossible was on the air. It was one of the most expensive TV shows to produce. I think it was like $200,000 an episode, which is kind of a lot of money back then.
That's a shitload of money.
Right. Today, that's nothing. That's like fucking catering.
That's a craft service.
Right. That's craft service. Today, I mean, I know a show today is like $1.5 million an episode.
Right.
A fucking TV.
Right.
Okay, you can shoot a movie, a whole movie. Right? But this is an episode of TV. So it was a little expensive for that time. And apparently CBS, who was owned by Paramount at the time, and Gulf Western was the parent company, they hired a new head of Paramount, and he was looking to slash.
That was, yeah, I mean, it was It's probably Charlie Blue Door.
I'm not sure. You can. The information's out there.
Yeah.
But long story short, this guy's hired as the you know CEO of fucking CBS,
right.
And he's looking to cut corners. And of course, he fires everybody. Okay, from Mission Impossible.
Really? Okay.
For the exception of Peter Graves.
Okay.
Right? So he basically doesn't fire them. He doesn't come out and go, you guys are fired.
He's not rehiring.
Yeah.
Or the character dies.
Yeah. So Martin Landau was replaced by Leonard Nimoy.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And what they thought was that they can have recurring celebrities come on and play the different parts of the spies. Of course, they fucked the show up.
Right.
The show died and whatever. So when she wins her third Emmy, she goes up and she basically says in a classy way, there are some people I want to thank.
And
then there are some that I don't want to thank. And I'm not going to mention any names. And of course, everyone starts cracking up.
Really?
Because they knew what was up.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
It's very interesting.
That's very cool.
Yeah. And I had asked her about that. And she didn't specifically tell me what happened. But Paul Benz on Facebook, he's got a page, Barbara Bain's Hollywood star on the Walk of Fame. He's got a page where, you know, he wrote an article and there's a link there and the whole story's there.
It tells
everything. It's a lot more elaborate. Yeah. Yeah. And so basically she had to go through a gazillion fucking screen tests and auditions to get that part. And the last one was Lucille Ball, because Desi Lu was the production company
right.
that produced Mission Impossible.
That I didn't know.
Yeah. And Desi Lu was on the Paramount lot.
That I didn't know.
Yes. So I forgot what Lucille Ball said to her. Something like, she says that Lucille Ball looked her up and down and says something to the effect of, yep, she looks right. And that was it. You know, yeah. But I mean, Barbara Bain was a model. You know, she was a dancer. And you know, she translated into acting very
right.
well. Yeah. So back to cigars, because we went all over the fucking place. But that was something that happened to me today. And George Hamilton is in the movie. You know, we're connecting all the dots.
Exactly. You know,
we're connecting all the dots here. I should get Barbara Bain to do a plug for Nestorius Public Radio.
I think so.
I could have got Alex Rocco before he passed away.
Yeah.
The late fucking great Alex Rocco. May he rest in peace. Alex, I know you're fucking cracking somebody up there, because the dude was a pisser. He'd crack the fuck up. But so the thing about cigars and smoking in a lounge, number one, I'll tell you.
Okay.
I'm not a big fan of like being engulfed in everybody else's smoke.
Okay.
So that's primarily why I usually shy away from lounges. Now, I'm not opposed to them at all. I've smoked in plenty.
Right.
I mean, in Cuba, there are many cigar lounges where you go in. Some of them are like in, some of them are, a lot of them are indoors, but some of them are kind of like not completely indoors, or there's space, you know, where it's airy.
Well, there's Cuba. I mean, you know, there's...
I mean, there's some cigar lounges, some casas that have lounges in them.
Right.
They're like fucking like a small bedroom in New York, and there's like fucking 20 dudes smoking, and the smoke in there is so dense.
Well, I can understand that, but if something has some good air filtration,
yeah, there's no air filtration in those, man. It's just, and it becomes too much. But that's my first.
Okay.
That's my first reason.
All right, it's a game. All right, too much smoke.
The second reason is that a lot of cigar lounges tend to attract guys, right? That my only common theme and bond is going to be cigars.
Okay.
Nothing else,
okay.
Right? A lot of them are going to be fucking ass backward, Cro-Magnon thinking, sexist, racist, just fucking. And a perfect example is that day that I went to the cigar lounge with you.
Yeah.
It was so bizarre. It was almost as if, like, there was no original conversation going on in there. Not one iota.
Wait.
They were talking about, like, actors and how actors, you know, you're either in it or, you know, the success. Like, one guy's a successful voiceover artist. The other guy's a successful artist, actor. The other guy's a successful right. stand-up comedian. So they were all, like, in an arrogant way talking about how they knew... It was just.
First of all, let me correct something from you. No one's a success, you know.
They were acting like they were.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess
one guy's a fat, disgusting pig whom if he didn't have a marketable voice, he'd be fucking sucking cock in the back of a fucking, like, you know, corn cob manufacturing plant. It was just, the guy's gross. Anyway, part of the thing is that, like, if I'm going to have a conversation with somebody, yeah, right, you got to be able to talk about something other than cigars. And right, if what you're talking about is, like, sounds like Donald Trump, I can't be in there. You know what I mean? And that's my experience.
I've done that before. Last night, I was smoking in there. These guys were talking about some sports stuff. I said, okay, guys, I'll be back when you stop boring the fucking shit out of me.
Well, I'm not into sports. Right.
So I left. I went to get a lotto ticket. Mm-hmm. I won $200. I came back. I said, guys, I swear to God.
You and your fucking gambling. What, a scratch ticket? Get the fuck out of here.
I have proof.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I swear to God.
What scratch ticket?
A scratch ticket. I won $200.
What, like 3 sevens and it was $200?
No, no.
Jesus Christ.
It was $20, but there was a times 10. So it was $200.
Jesus fucking
Christ.
So
I said, guys,
you know how many scratch tickets I play and I win 20, I win 30, maybe
$2,
yeah, a free ticket.
Yeah,
you got the most amazing luck when it comes to gambling.
Sometimes not.
Well, for the most part, you had a fucked up experience not too long ago where you lost the most you ever lost in your life. But if you look at your track record, you go to fucking Vegas and you win like fucking $5,000, $10,000.
Yeah.
On fucking slot machines, no less.
For doing that,
I mean, on slot machines, no less. That's preposterous.
What, everybody doesn't win on slot machines?
Not that much, no. No. The highest probability of making money in Vegas on any game are not the fucking slot machines. Yes, they would be on the crap table.
Right, I got it.
So if you were to tell me you won $5,000 on a crap table, I'd be like, oh, okay, cool. Do you know? Obviously, you know how to play crap,
right?
You know how to play craps, but and also it's, you know, it's the luck. It's the luck of the dice, but also the odds are in your favor.
Right.
Playing craps, fucking slot machine, no. Maybe $200, and if you're lucky, you take the money, you get the fuck out. Because $200 is $200.
So anyway, I won that. I went back to the store. I go, guys, I just want to thank you for boring the fucking shit out of me. I just won $200.
Yeah. Yeah, no. So for me, here's the thing.
Right.
For me, what I love about smoking cigars is it relaxes you.
Right.
And I love the smell of a good cigar. Like, in fact, I could sit next to somebody, not in a lounge, but outside and just smell the aroma.
We live in fucking Los Angeles. We can't smoke anywhere. I mean, that's
what do you
thing.
Mean you can't smoke anywhere?
We can't smoke anywhere. There's nowhere to smoke. What do we do? Sit in the middle of the street and go like this?
You mean there's no outdoor seating areas?
There's no outdoor seating area.
No, there's always
smoking.
Coffee beans and stuff like that.
I sit in that little fucking coffee bean and we sat there before freezing our balls
off. That was because it was cold and you had like a fucking tank top and shorts.
First of all, I've never owned a tank top in my life.
I know.
I
was going to make a commentary about you, right? So since I've known you, I have never seen you in a t-shirt.
I don't own t-shirts.
I've never seen you in a pair of jeans.
I never bought a pair of jeans.
I've never seen you in a pair of sneakers.
I own one pair.
You're always in a fucking button-down shirt, pair of slacks and a pair of shoes, always.
Right. Yeah,
no matter where we're, always.
And that's how it's been since I've been 6 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
So what is that about?
I don't know. I just never, here's the thing. I just never bought a pair.
Is that something that was handed down to you from your dad?
Yeah, my dad never bought a pair of jeans before in his life. Mm. He was never wore a pair of jeans. So I guess maybe it has. And so, you know, I was more of the, kid who liked the high fashion kind
you
of
like
stuff.
To dress nice.
I like
all
to dress
the
nice,
time.
Yeah, exactly. And I was always going to nice places.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I grew up a little spoiled, you know.
No, that's interesting because, like, for instance, I have a pretty decent wardrobe, right? Like, I could wear a nice button-down shirt, a nice pair of slacks, and a nice pair of shoes every fucking day.
Right.
And a different pair, right? And I would look very nice, elegant, and mature. Instead, I like to dress comfortable.
If I was in a pair of fucking jeans and
you'd feel uncomfortable.
I feel so uncomfortable. If like I have like sweatpants on and I'm at the gym, obviously I can't fucking work out in slacks, but even wearing that, I'm uncomfortable.
Right. Yeah. Right. But the thing is, like, the mentality is that I dress up when I have to, right? So, like, if I have to go to a function, I can fucking whip up a nice outfit in no time because I have a nice collection of ties, a nice collection of shirts that'll match. You know, I have a nice wardrobe and I have a good sense of style. So, but I never think of dressing like that all the time. You know what I mean?
Well, so, I don't think I have much choice because I like I said,
because that's all you have.
That's all I have.
Right.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm uncomfortable in stuff that's not, maybe I'll.
No, I get it.
I'll wear like a what do you call it? Maybe I'll get like a.
I get it. Know, I get it.
Cashmere pajamas or something.
So back to the I want to ask Jeremy. Jeremy, you there?
Yo, what's up?
What's happening, man?
How's it going?
Good, good. So I wanted to ask you, Jeremy is like the Jedi master of cigars as far as I'm concerned. I was telling Craig about how you and I came about learning that each other liked cigars when we were going to Vegas that time for the NAB.
Right.
And so ever since then, we've had, I mean, aside from the studio and recording and this stuff, we have this connection, this commonality of cigars. But what are your thoughts on smoking in lounges?
I mean, you have the phobia, because this just seems like he has the lounge phobia.
No, I don't have a phobia. It's just a preference. I'd rather be outside in a nice airy environment.
I like air. I like air conditioning.
And watching people go by. I just love watching people go by. But Jeremy doesn't have to go anywhere. Jeremy's got the most fucking psychotic collection of cigars. I'd fuck his humidor. That's how fucking sexy it is. He's got, I mean, I've shown pictures of his humidor, his collection, and people are like, you know, they don't know what to say. And the guy is a connoisseur from the highest, you know, level. So what's your take on that, Jeremy?
Here's the thing is, like, I actually agree with you on a lot of the points that you made, Nestor, regarding kind of some of the lounges that you come upon.
The people
tend to get there's a lot of political topics that maybe I don't mesh with or would just rather not discuss when I'm relaxing.
Right.
But
that's a good point.
I've gone to cigar lounges. There's a couple here downtown, and you know, when I can go there and just kind of chill out, I like going places where I can get away from home and smoke a cigar.
Right, right.
And I told you recently that I became a member at this other lounge.
Right.
I like that because it's not a cigar lounge.
Right.
Primarily.
Right. It's a lounge.
It's a lounge where you can smoke cigars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's called Bar Jackalope. It's actually a bar inside of the Seven Grand. Right up 7th Street here.
So it's kind of like a private club,
so
to speak.
But it happened to be cigars, okay.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, but they don't sell cigars there, right?
No, they sell cigars. They're not the best quality cigars on hand, but they don't mind you bringing your own sticks.
Which I like that. That's the other thing. You go to a fucking cigar lounge, like you feel obligated to buy a fucking cigar.
Of course. I mean, what do you mean?
I get it.
I mean, I feel like a dick if I didn't buy something there.
That's the etiquette, you know?
No,
you got to buy one of their sticks.
You
can't use their space. And
No, I get it. But I mean, I just assume just give them $5. Right, and because I may want to smoke a Partagas Series D number 4, or I may want to smoke a fucking Monte Cristo Open Regatta.
You know what
I'm saying? They don't have those.
Yeah, they had those.
Where?
They had them in the back.
Oh, like in a private.
They got them in the back, but then you're paying $40 a stick for an $8 cigar.
Well, you know, don't be cheap and go to the cigar bar.
No, I can see if they would say, here, put $5 for, since you're not buying a cigar. I wouldn't have a problem with that. But I think you hit it on.
What about $20?
I'll put in $20. Fuck it.
Right,
most lounges are cool as long as you buy one of their cigars, then they don't care what you smoke.
Right. Yeah. No. I get it. And I've done that.
Yeah.
But I haven't found a lounge that justifies me buying a cigar to hang out in there. That's all I'm saying. And I think you hit the nail on the head, Jeremy. That's the thing. I smoke a cigar to relax, and it doesn't matter where I'm smoking it. And I found that in lounges, I would say 9 or 8 out of 10 times, there's elements in there that kind of fuck with my
they detract from your relaxation.
Yeah, that's it. There you go. And that's what it is. And it's just like there's something about smoking a cigar that it could transport you into another time, another time frame. That's what's magical about Cuba. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that is another time.
No, it is another time. Yeah. But like Jeremy and I drove down to Tijuana, and we were in one of those Casa del Habanos there, and one of the
closed down.
What the one in
the one in Tijuana got closed down.
I don't know about
the Casa del Habanos.
I was just there 2 weeks ago.
Well, there was one that got closed down. He was selling fakes. He was putting in the fakes with
the regular ones. Yeah. The one I'm talking about wasn't closed down. Okay. But he had a torcedor that was in from Cuba for a few months. And the guy, they were very hospitable to us. Right. Very gracious. First thing is the guy gives us a cigar. How much? No, that's on me. Then the torcedor comes and blesses us with another fucking two cigars each. And so for the time being that we were there, we weren't there that long, I felt like I was in Cuba.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, if you can create that, you know, ambiance and that environment in the United States somewhere, I think you'd have something.
Yeah, you got to talk to you about that. You got to talk to George Hamilton about that because he did that.
No, I know. Yeah. Well, George Hamilton stopped doing cigars. He's no longer in the cigar business and yada, yada, yada.
I know. He had, when he had his lounge, where my office was, you pulled a little peg and the closet opened and there he had what was called the Cuba room. Uh-huh. It was 1952.
Nice. And Jeremy's been to Cuba and Jeremy smoked in some of the nice places there and yada, yada. So that's what we need to work on, coming up with a lounge that has that ambiance.
Well, Jeremy, let me ask you a question. So they can get away with it with smoking because it's private?
Yeah, so it's a private lounge. You have to make reservations.
You have to buy a bottle.
I was going
to
say, is there a membership fee that this
is how they do it. It's primarily a Scotch lounge. Okay. So they have a lot of fine Scotches, rare Scotches and all that kind
fine
of stuff.
Fine Scotches.
And so if you buy a bottle from their list, then that is your membership.
And how much is the bottle? 200?
The bottle is ridiculously expensive.
What if I smoke every day? I got to buy a bottle of Scotch every day?
No. You keep the bottle there.
Oh, okay.
And you're a member. You're a member as long as the bottle lasts.
So how much is the bottle? Are you at liberty to say?
Yeah, I can say that I paid $300 for a bottle that will cost you $75 in the store.
That's not too bad.
Okay, so you're paying about three times, maybe a little bit more than three times.
The service is impeccable. Once you do that, you can make reservations and get right in. You can get in as anybody, but you have to, you know, it's like, oh, you got to wait an hour.
Now, Jeremy, I don't drink, so I don't, I just, you know.
So then, I can go in there.
So I'm like, I want some of your finest Diet Coke.
Yeah. You know
what I mean? I'll pay $300 for a Diet Coke.
But you can be a guest of Jeremy's.
Okay. You can be a guest. I can have up to four guests.
Okay.
So I'm in the same boat.
Myself and June went there last night, and it was a good time.
I'm in the same boat, so I don't drink. So if I wanted to go there, I can wait online like everybody else.
I'm not going to wait online to smoke.
But how does that work? Would I have to pay an entrance fee or something?
No, you just come as my guest.
No, but
you're in Cuba. I want to go by myself.
Let's say without you in the picture.
Without me in the picture, you have to go. They got this whole thing where you flip a light switch and write your name on a piece of paper. And then, you know, like.
Am I in the Delta House?
No, I mean, you know, it's a whole thing. It's definitely a scene.
So you write a piece of paper and do what?
Then they come out and they say, oh, yeah, we'll try to get you in. We're not sure how long it's going to be.
Got it.
You know, that kind of thing.
Oh, got it. God. And you may or may not get in depending on the day of the week and the time.
They don't care about that. They got enough money. It's a Sed Moses joint. He's not worried about money.
Right. Ooh. Sed Moses?
Sed Moses owns 90% of the bars in downtown Los Angeles.
Got it.
So he doesn't give a fuck what you have.
Moses,
he doesn't care what you have. He'll part the fucking ocean. He'll part the ocean of fucking homeless urine man's fucking sea over here. He doesn't give a fuck. Well, listen, we've kind of like gone over a teeny bit. So let's wrap this up. Thank you so much, Jeremy, for joining us in the conversation on cigars.
I'll start drinking.
I would definitely like to continue that dialogue at some point. Maybe even do a podcast on cigar and all that other
stuff. Cigars and Moses.
Yeah, cigars and Moses. No, because I mean, you know, it's a gentleman's thing.
Right.
You know, it's not. It's cigar smoking is not like what I don't know what people's illusions of it, you know, of it is, but it's a gentleman thing. So thank you for joining. And so we're going to wrap it up. What are you up to? What are you doing? What are you doing? Are you
right
what are
now?
You're smoking a lot of pot. What are you doing?
I don't smoke pot.
You're delivering fucking waffles or something. What are you doing? What's your latest job?
What are my latest job? My latest job is going to be, I can't say anything right now.
Right.
My latest profession. We'll see. I guess tune in for the next episode and we'll find out
what
I'm
doing. Something interesting.
No, I'm going on.
You're a fucking dealer at a fucking private poker game. You run guns. You do every fucking thing.
I don't run guns.
You don't run guns?
No.
Kilos of fucking hope. You drive all sorts of shit. Lyft. You've done it all.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's it. We got to stay tuned till the next time you do
the
next
thing. We'll see what's on the next agenda.
All right. So this concludes the episode of Nestorius Public Radio. Make sure to like our page on Facebook, Nestorius Public Radio. Make sure to come to weplayradio.com and check out the episodes. And, you know, if you have a hard time on iTunes, come to WePlayRadio to download my episodes, because iTunes has been acting a little weird from time to time with episodes for no apparent reason. But if you're a regular subscriber and you're having a hard time, make sure you come to weplayradio.com, download the episodes directly from the site. It's all good. It's the same thing. Make sure you like our Facebook page, weplayradio.com, and follow the We Play Radio page on Twitter. And follow me on Twitter, I guess, if you want, Nestorius NYC. And that's it, man. We out.
Encouraged me the whole way along. Ow. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit.